This is the Cap and Haw Show from CSN Chicago and streaming on WGN Plus.
Welcome back to Cap and Haw on Comcast Sportsnet and WGN Plus. Again, my man David Haw is on vacay. Well earned. Guy works his tail off. He'll be back on the 13th. Enjoy yourself, D-Haw. Shannon Ryan is another fellow tripster, and she's done just magnificent work. We're talking award-winning stuff here. When all this stuff clears at the University of Illinois and it's all in the rearview mirror, Shannon Ryan will win an award for her coverage. It's been absolutely magnificent, and we're honored to have her now on Cap and Haw. Shannon, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
We're doing very well. The story hasn't yet, in my opinion, taken a national stage, but it certainly is a big story in Champaign, and you have covered it exceptionally well. Are you stunned by what you're starting to hear come out of Illinois, the stuff that's alleged to go on down there?
It is shocking, and I think another element of that is just how it just keeps building. You know, sometimes a story comes out. This is all started, kind of came to the surface with a football player tweeting something. And it hasn't stopped, and it's now crossed into different sports with women's soccer and the women's basketball players filing a lawsuit now. And, I mean, so this is going on for, like, months now where it just keeps building and more people coming out, and it's going to a higher level, going into a federal lawsuit now. So I'm just really surprised just how long this has been going on and just how it's continuously developing.
Shannon, I'm surprised by maybe because it's a legal thing, but the University of Illinois' lack of getting out in front of something like this. I mean, this is only going to get uglier for them. I'm baffled by how people still have jobs, i.e. Mike Thomas. Are you as baffled that the University of Illinois is kind of, I don't want to say hiding behind this, but the allegations and the things that are happening here are just – what you've uncovered, I think it's going to just get uglier and uglier and uglier.
Yeah, well, I mean, as far as firing people now, I think that could be a little tricky now that it's going into legalities where you don't want a coach to then fire you if these claims are proved, or to, sue you if the claims are proved to be false. So that can be a little bit tricky. But as far as getting out in front of it, I think that's a correct assessment. It could be viewed that way for sure, because it wasn't until after Mike Thomas, threw his support behind Tim Beckman, the football coach, after some allegations came out. And, then after that, they launched this investigation and hired an outside firm only after there was kind of this public outcry, and had initially just done these internal reviews and said nothing was found wrong. And, I think people thought that wasn't conducted properly just because there would obviously be some bias there if you're conducting this internally. So, it was only after all these things that then they took the steps to hire law firms to do external reviews. And then Mike Thomas, the athletic director, put into place some, I guess they called it, steps to ensure this not happening again with, different people in place to oversee teams on a different level, just, but it's kind of after the fact a little bit. I think you're right in that.
Shannon, I wanted to read like one thing you had in the piece. I mean, they put black players in the quote dog pound as punishment, which the suit said indirectly labeled them as dogs. And they relegated white players who supported the black players to the dog pound, called them mascots. I mean, I've never read anything like that around college hoops or college sports, period. And then, so yesterday, Kiara Morris, who's a Morgan Park graduate, she joined the lawsuit. And what's the latest? I mean, do you think more players are going to come out?
Well, I mean, Kiara Morris, she's actually hasn't officially joined it, at least as of yesterday. So she's asked to join it. They're reviewing, the law firm's reviewing her allegations, and I was told it's, may very well happen that she becomes a plaintiff. But that's eight players on a basketball team where, there's a limited number of players. This isn't football with eight, which would still be a lot. So, I mean, this is a big majority of the team here we're talking about. So I don't know if more will come out, but it's already so many that it's definitely beyond the legal stuff, this is making a negative mark on Illinois, just in public perception, I think, too.
We're talking to Shannon Ryan, excuse me, from the Chicago Tribune, as this scandal starts to really swirl and get bigger and bigger at the University of Illinois. What I find unbelievable is, A, if Mike Thomas did not know that these racial slurs and all this was going on, then he's the most incompetent athletic director in the history of college sports. And if that's true that he didn't know and none of this stuff got to the president's office, then they all should be swept out. How in the hell is Mike Thomas still have a job at the University of Illinois? I can't figure it out.
Well, I think what the university is saying, and the Chancellor Phyllis Weiss released a statement, you know, just saying that their investigations are still ongoing. They're not going to, I don't think, it sounds like they don't want to make any changes until that's concluded, if they would make any changes. And now with this legal filing, I'm not sure, you know, they want to let that play out. This is obviously now getting into a lot messier territory. And I like I said before, you don't, they probably are looking at it from their, to protect themselves too, about firing somebody that, you know, if these are allegations to be found wrong, that you don't want that person to come back and sue you for, you know, wrongful, you know, firing. But I think there's a lot of people. I mean, if you just look at from the stance of Mike Thomas, of he's the athletic director who came in and fired Ron Zook, the football coach, and fired the women's basketball coach, and hired Tim Beckman, hired Matt Ballant, the women's basketball coach. So these are his guys.
And
know?
John
so,
Gross.
Yeah,
and John Gross. But, I mean, there hasn't been anybody saying any wrongdoing against the men's basketball team.
Correct.
But, you know, so I'm saying from, these are his hires. So I can see why he feels like he probably needs to protect them, but also for himself. So this leaves, you know, this does, I mean, fall heavily on Mike Thomas's shoulders, just because these are the people he put in place there. And these are really serious allegations coming out about both of them. So, like I said, just from a public perception standpoint, and for who's going to take responsibility on this, I think there's you know, there's a bit of a target on Mike Thomas now.
Well, they had five players transfer. I mean, it's one thing if you don't know what's going on at practice. I suppose that's maybe a possibility. But you, when five players transfer off the team, I mean, that's pretty much a red flag, is it not? I mean, that's insane.
Yeah, I mean, because like we said, I mean, there's you know, a limited number of basketball players on a team. So when, you know, half your roster is leaving, that's definitely like, what's going on here? Something's fishy here, right? So, you know, and I think in these players' families, sent three of them sent letters to the university in April. And those didn't come to the surface until, I think, after, you know, maybe late May. But, you know, after that, the university said, we're doing this internal investigation and looking into it, but we didn't find anything wrong here. And I think the parents were obviously not happy with that conclusion, and that's why then they hired this outside law firm. But I don't think they wanted to keep waiting for a result there, and now we see this lawsuit.
These are as sickening as allegations as I can ever recall, and I mean, it's 2015. It's beyond baffling to me. So let's just say this thing plays out, and I'd be stunned if these were overturned or thrown out in any capacity whatsoever. So let's go down that line and say that the University of Illinois is found guilty, and the people in this lawsuit are, you know, all deemed responsible. What could the fallout be at Illinois? How high of a level are we talking here? Could it be president on down? What would you think would be the, you know, the fallout of something like this?
Yeah, I mean, it could be really big. I mean, they have a new president in place who met with the Tribune editorial board, and you know, we took a pretty strong stance on this, I think, actually, the allegations at the time. But, I mean, obviously, this could go far beyond a coach being fired. I mean, this could be, like I said, there's a lot of responsibility here for Mike Thomas. Just he should be overseeing these programs. And even if there were allegations made, or you heard some rumblings or saw something that raised some red flags, those are things, like you said before, you need to get in front of. So, you know, Mike Thomas obviously needs to take some responsibility in the lawsuit. The Board of Trustees is named. Mike Thomas is named in this lawsuit. And I'm not sure like how far up it goes. And if the chancellor gets involved with this, she's not named on that specifically on the legal filing. But, you know, this is really big. It goes beyond, like I said, just a coach or an assistant coach getting axed. I mean, there's these are very serious allegations. So it could be really far reaching.
What's happened when you've reached out to Boland and Divelbliss, who I guess is the guy that's saying more stuff than the head coach, which is amazing to me.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they're talking right now. Matt Boland isn't talking right now, especially with this lawsuit going on. But, I don't think I'm going to hear from him. I think, he's obviously trying to protect his job. But just like if you just think of this, if you're a recruit or a parent of a recruit, and even just hearing about these allegations, that is going to scare you away.
Yeah, why would you go there? Right.
Right. So just for the recruiting, like what could become of this program? Let's just say this, the court says this is all false, and the coaches are innocent, everything, they didn't do anything wrong. It's still going to be in your mind as a player, especially, if you're an African-American player, like why would you want to go into that environment? So just from the coaching, just from that recruiting standpoint, I just don't see how you kind of survive this. And, I think it would be really difficult to recruit and to kind of re-image that program.
I think any program.
Right now. Yeah.
I mean, if you're an African-American, why would you go to the University of Illinois as a student athlete?
Right. Even if some of this stuff is not true, you can't tell me there's this mass conspiracy that we've started with Simon Savanovich and we've gotten to this point with the lawsuit and everything that's happened in between and go, they all made it up, I'm going there. Right?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I said, just the public perception of this might be, there's a $10 million lawsuit, but how long this will go on, the waves of this and how far reaching it could be, how long this would take to get over and to, you basically have to rebrand your program, I think, no matter what the outcome is of the lawsuits or these investigations. This is definitely a dark cloud over that university as a whole. If you go beyond sports, as a university.
No, I got to ask you one last thing. We're talking to Shannon Ryan from the Chicago Tribune on this Illinois scandal that continues to get bigger and bigger. I have not seen much in the other Chicago papers. I have not seen much at all nationally other than linking to your stories. Why do you think that is that you have written some amazing stuff? There is a $10 million federal lawsuit, so it's not as though you made anything up. You broke the story, and now all these facts are there that there is a lawsuit, there are these allegations, there's all these people complaining about stuff down there. Why is no one else in the media talking about this?
Well, I think because it's a women's sport, with this lawsuit specifically.
But it ensnared the football program, too, in some ways.
No, right. I mean, I'm saying that's wrong, that women's sports don't get the same amount of attention. With the football story, I think there was some national attention, but it died off pretty quickly. And I think that's maybe a statement on just the stature of Illinois sports. It's not, if this is Alabama, Ohio State, and these allegations are made, that's a huge national story everyone's covering because it's a huge successful program. So I think it kind of speaks to their stature in sports a little bit right now, too.
Unbelievable. Keep up the great work. Don't ever stop being what you are, which is a sensational journalist.
Thank you.
All the best, great Shannon.
You too. Thanks,
Have
guys.
A good happy holiday weekend.
Thanks.
See ya. There you go. Shannon Ryan from the Chicago Tribune. It's amazing to me that more people have not picked up on this yet.
I think the only reason she was talking about Illinois football, kind of like being that story being poo-pooed a little bit, is because this story is bigger. This story is bigger than that Illinois football story, which is already insane in its own way.
She's spot on, too. If this was a revenue sport, the coverage, even with Absolutely. The lack of success at Illinois in the last decade, let's be kind, it would be way bigger. But since it's women's hoops.
It's baffling that it's not way big. This is not just a sports story.
I was just looking at the demographics at the Big Ten universities because I just think it's tough to be a black person on a Big Ten campus. Illinois is 5% black. I mean, that's, if you flip that around, and you're out of your comfort zone. There should be special attention being paid to make sure that they're comfortable going to, being in that environment. And it's the exact opposite. Indiana's 4% black. I mean, it's a big change for a lot of people jumping onto those campuses.
This is a lack of institutional control. Everyone needs to go.
No question about it.
Period.
Wintrust loves a good rivalry. Who doesn't? I know I do. Here in Chicago, we've got one of the best. Cub Sox, north side, south side, blue versus black. Put your money where your heart is, Chicago, and decide for your side with a Cubs or White Sox checking account from your local Wintrust Community Bank. It even comes with your very own Cubs or Sox debit card so you can show your baseball pride every time you make a purchase. How cool is that? Like, I buy Guff coffee almost every day. And I pay with my Cubs debit card. Why occasionally, I use the Sox debit card. I have both. Hold on a minute.
I thought you were going to tell me you paid with the Sox when you bought me coffee. And then.
No, you didn't. I got them. Hold on a second. There's my Cubs debit card right there. There's my Sox debit card.
I don't think you use the White Sox debit card.
I use them both. Absolutely right, I do. No question.
That's just not being true to yourself. It isn't.
Fair and balanced. That's my way.
Okay.
Fair and balanced, Mark. That's, okay. You ought to look into that.
I must have been watching a different show.
Anyway. Wow. Whenever you choose, online or in the bank, you're going to help Wintrust donate up to $500,000 to Cubs and White Sox charities. Follow along online. See whose fans are cheering the loudest. Learn more at Wintrust.com/you decide. Banking services provided by Wintrust Community Banks. Chicago Cubs, Chicago White Sox trademarks used with permission. Member FDIC. We'll get back to these calls. Ken and Darian, Ryan in Fort Wayne. Jed Hoyer joins us in about 12 minutes. We'll be right back.
This is the Cap and Haw Show from CSN Chicago and streaming on WGN Plus.
I left that town. You know I left that town. When I left St. Louis, you know I was Chicago bound.
Well, George Thorogood is a great way to start the weekend, baby. Oh. How about St. Louis? Chris Correa. Firing. Gone. Get out of here. He's scouting director. Out. He is one of the rogue employees involved in the hacking scandal. Cap and Haw continues on Comcast Sportsnet and WGN Plus. I'm David Kaplan, David Haw on vacation. And Mark Carmen, Ryan McGuffey are in for the Haw. 312-235-2525. And Jed Hoyer joins us in about 8-9 minutes. So if you have a question you'd like us to ask Jed, shoot a tweet to @TheCatMan, and we will take care of you. 312-235-2525. Ken is in Darien, Illinois, and Ken's next. What's up there, Sparkles? 35-25. Hey, Ken, turn the TV off, buddy.
I'm here.
Mute that TV, pal.
I did.
Okay, what's going on, buddy?
I have a Cubs thing for you. Since Jed is coming on the show, maybe you could run this by him. I want to talk about Lester, not how good he is or how bad he is. I want to talk about his inability to go to first base. Let me set the scene for you. The Cubs make the playoffs. It's a deciding game. The opposite team steals 5 bases, and 3 of those runners score because our $150 million a year man can't go to first base.
Well, let me ask you a question, Ken.
Yes.
Guy has 2 World Series rings. He's pitched in clinch games. How come that wasn't a factor in those games?
I'm not taking anything away from Lester. My question is anybody working with him so he can make this move in the near future? I'll hang up and listen to your answer.
I can't answer it because I haven't been at their workouts. Hold on a second, Guff.
They didn't sign John Lester to throw to first base or you know, make sure guys don't steal on him.
Correct.
Ken, you got to be satisfied with the way that Lester just stares down a runner. Nobody does a better stare than John Lester, and this is something that's been with him his entire career, and as Cap just mentioned, 2 World Series. So that's not going to be the reason why the Cubs don't get over the top this
John
year.
Lester postseason pitching is 6-4 in 9 separate series with a 2.57 ERA.
I do find it unbelievable that he can't throw the ball to first base, though. That is incredible. Seriously.
I know, but it's not new. So if this is something he signed the contract and stopped throwing to first base, then there's an issue. But I don't know if he just doesn't want to or what, but
there's something mental going on.
Yeah.
We need a mental skills coach. Who's the Blackhawks mental skills coach?
The Cubs have a whole mental
Edzo?
The Cubs have a whole mental skills department.
Who's in that department?
I
wonder if I could get
Darnell McDonald.
He is.
Darnell McDonald.
That's right. Yeah. We loved you and I.
Yeah.
Remember we dealt with him at spring training?
He's fantastic.
Yeah, he used to play for the Red Sox, too.
Can I get an appointment with him?
Remember we used to play? That audio for when Eddie introduced it. What do you call him again? The Jackal. Does the Jackal have that stuff?
I don't know if he does.
We got to get him that audio.
Who would have that audio? Oh, that would be Trey Ronald Elling might have that audio.
We have to get that audio back.
Assistant equipment manager, whoever it was.
And you know who one of the worst, in fact, I'll let Mike and Moni say it. Mike and Moni, go ahead.
Hey, Cap, it's Mike. You know, Maddox had that same problem with throwing to first base and ended up being one of the best pitchers I ever seen.
Greg Maddox was awful throwing to first. Did not have a good pickoff, but he did not like throwing over there. Hated it.
You know why? I think is that he just knew he was better at getting the guy out at home plate.
Correct.
Worry about the guy at home plate.
Completely agree. Mike, thanks, man. Have a great fourth.
Thanks, Cap. You too.
See you, buddy. Let's go to Fort Wayne, Indiana. Got to get a Hoosier in here.
Absolutely.
That's right. Where are you wandering around today, Ryan?
I'm just hanging out at home. Just actually moved back from Chicago this week to come home and finish up my degree in broadcasting. But I'm a huge Cubs fan. Obviously, as you can tell, my dad named me after Ryan Sandberg.
Oh, so your name is spelled R-Y-N-E.
Yes, R-Y-N-E.
Love it. Didn't go so well for you managing the Phillies, did it?
Don't quit on what you're doing there, Ryan.
No, it didn't. And thank you for that. I just want to call in first. I wanted to say if we get to the World Series, or if the Cubs get to the World Series, I should say, Lester has like a .43 ERA, so I'm not going to worry about throwing to first because guys don't usually get on. But I just wanted to say I don't want to see a huge trade for a Kazmir, a Tyler Clippard, and a Ben Zobrist in one big deal, because that just goes against everything they've done. They've rebuilt. They've stocked the farm system. Make smaller trades. Put in a trade like a C.J. Edwards and an Albert Almora. Move those kind of guys because, like you said earlier on the show, the Angels won 98 games last year and flamed out. If the Cubs make a huge trade, anything can happen in the playoffs and they flame out in the first round and you've traded Schwarber and you've traded these guys and you've traded Russell and Bryant, where does that leave you now? Right back where you were before they got here.
Yeah, no one's talking about Russell or Bryant, but Schwarber? If you told me I'm getting the right pieces back that I feel not only helped me this season but beyond, I'm all in. Done.
You would move Schwarber?
Absolutely. If I'm getting the right piece back and he's not just for the next 2 months, I'm not talking about for Johnny Cueto for 2 months or Samardzija. I'm saying if I traded him in a deal and I got Cole Hamels back, who I've got under contract for 3 more years and an option, done.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's an interesting thing. I guess when it first started, I was kind of like, I don't know about this, but now I'm all in on the rebuild, and I'm totally about taking it step by step, and I just don't want to see all their hard work and the rebuild the farm system done for a rental and then flame out.
That's why they just spent $13 million with including penalties. Appreciate your call, Ryan. $13 million yesterday in international signings. $8 million plus the penalties.
And at some point, we need to stop overrating. And I know these guys they all look good. And Schwarber came up here for that week and was fantastic. But let's not overrate the prospects here. You know, and there's no club in baseball that's ever had 9 guys come up from their farm system and pan out.
And ultimately, correct. That's going to make that's the difference in a great organization versus a bad one. You got to know who to keep and know who not to keep. The Braves were phenomenal at it. The Cardinals have been phenomenal at it. We'll see if Theo and Jed are that.
And if you look back to the White Sox of 05, they ran through the postseason because they got what? Unbelievable starting pitching.
Yep.
Unbelievable. It wasn't like they were scoring 12 runs a game. They had a good team, not a great team. They had great, great starting pitching. Almost every guy was throwing complete games every night.
Yeah, they did something no one else will ever do.
Correct.
Nobody will ever throw 4 straight complete games again in a postseason series, ever.
So while we all think the Cubs aren't quite there yet, you get into postseason tournament,
anything goes.
Anything goes. What happens? You play the 1-game wild card, and Jake Arrieta wins. And you go to the NLDS, and John Lester and Jason Hamill, and back to Arrieta, and you're like, whoa.
Mark spent time covering the Royals. Look at them last year. They were their backs were against the wall multiple times in the 1-game playoff, and they were a couple outs away from winning it all.
I tend to be with Ryan Sandberg Jr., though. Let's not go crazy and blow up whatever you've built for this year.
And I don't think they will.
And
they won't.
I don't think they will either. I agree. Measured attack. That's where they're at. They're not worthy of.
Calculated.
Yeah, measured.
And
calculated,
by the way,
whatever.
John Lester in 2 World Series appearances has started 3 games. He's gone 21 innings, so 7 innings to start. His record in those games is 3-0 with a 0.43 ERA.
I mean, I appreciate the buzz and the World Series talk, but we've had like 4 callers now all say if we get to the World Series.
Slow the roll.
Lester was also on the bump.
There's 7 games over 500. Let's just relax.
And remember, Lester was on the bump last year for the A's, and they lost that game to the Royals.
Right. He had a 7-3 lead in the 8th. Yeah. So, Cap'n Haw brought to you by Horowitz, Horowitz & Associates, Illinois' top personal injury lawyers. They won the largest verdict for a brain injury in Illinois history, the largest verdict for a back injury in Illinois history, and the largest verdict for a neck injury in Illinois history. That's the triple crown of lawyering. Horowitz, Horowitz & Associates. These guys win. Thank you for being such great sponsors of Cap'n Haw. Jed Hoyer is next. We'll be right back.
This is the Cap'n Haw Show from CSN Chicago and streaming on WGN Plus.
Guys from Jumpsuit with their Cubs Win, Let's Make Party song. As the Cubs sweep away the Mets, only the 4th time in the history of the franchise that they sweep a season series of 5 games or more. Twice it happened in the 1800s. They took 6 from the Braves in 2008 and 7 from the Mets this season. They've won 9 in a row overall from the New York Mets. Jed Hoyer, kind enough to join us a lot here on Cap'n Haw. He is the fine general manager of the Chicago Cubs. Jed, good morning. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well. How you guys doing?
We're doing very, very well. We had the magician on, Simon Winthrop, yesterday. Were you there for part of for that thing?
I actually missed it. I wish I had been there. I knew the day before, DJ Tech and Donnie, our traveling secretary, had texted me and he said, "Hey, Joe wants to get a magician. Are you cool with me looking around and doing that?" And I was like, "Oh, that's a great idea." I mean, Joe is amazing and having the right feel for those moments, and he hit a home run. I think that it was the right time. It was a miserable trip to St. Louis. Like every part of it, we got delayed on the way down there, so we got in late. We played badly. We got swept, and then the team got in at 5 in the morning on Monday morning, and I just think Joe felt like it was a perfect time to lighten the mood. Kind of make everyone laugh and bring everyone together. And, I think a lot of managers do that with a team meeting and, be real serious. And I think Joe does that sometimes with sort of having a light touch. And I think he, like I said, he hit a home run with that one, and it went off really well.
All right, I got to ask you, how do you balance – you've been part of championships in Boston. You were GM in San Diego. Now you're GM here working with Theo. How do you balance winning now? Because – there is a palpable buzz in the city. We've got callers calling in how they're paying attention again. They're so excited. How do you balance making moves, whoever it is, to get in here and try and give a jolt to your clubhouse because these guys believe they can win versus going, no, we worked 3 years to try and build this system up and overhaul this thing. We can't do that.
Yeah, I don't think there's a formula. I think there's a feel for what makes sense and what is – ridiculous, and I think obviously you said it, we worked really hard to build this up. We want to be good for a long time. And obviously if you just decide to, cast all your prospects away for players right now, that's not going to last very long. So I think it's a feel. Obviously, the season you're in right now, you have to put more weight on that always. I think you have to know that it's difficult to get to this place. You never know what's going to happen in the future. You just have to make sure you're doing things that you can justify that are smart and not overreaching. And also you have to think about how impactful a certain move will be. I think we had like 62 games after the deadline. So, if you can't sell out your future for 10 or 12 starts or for 20 relief appearances, you have to always put it in context of how impactful will this be and how much does this make sense? Because it is a 2-month period after the break.
Jed, everybody loves to play GM this time of year, but with the 2 wild cards now in each league, you know, and I know Theo, and I know you guys have both discussed this, but can you explain to people who keep calling in and they have, you know, Scott Kazmir's and all the other names that potentially could be out there, but the problem is there potentially might be only three or four true sellers. So how difficult does that make your job when you're looking to acquire or sell?
It's a weird year this year. The American League especially is really jumbled together. You know, everyone keeps on talking about Oakland selling. Well, Oakland's got, you know, I think they've been the unluckiest team in baseball so far. They have every right to look at it and say, hey, this might turn around. You know, I think when you look at it, it's probably going to shake loose a little bit as we get closer to the deadline. You got another 25 games or so before we get there. And I think things will change. I think right now things are really jumbled up because there aren't many sellers. But that'll change. Teams will struggle and kind of declare themselves, and I think that'll make the market free up a little bit. But I do think the second wild card, if you're three or four games under 500 and you might only be, you know, say five or six games out of the wild card, that's a good week. And I think owners look at it that way, that, you know, why sort of ruin the rest of your fans' summer by selling at the deadline if all it takes is one good week to get back in the race.
Jed, everybody saw the strain in Anaheim this week with Jerry DePoto resigning, and then Joe Maddon's coming out talking, you know, I have no interest really in doing Jed or Theo's job. But here's a guy who's had so much success, been around so long, that he's probably, I mean, he maybe deserves to have a big voice in that room. How rare is it for you, in your experience, to work with a guy like that who really just wants to stay in his lane?
Yeah, I think Joe, I think two things. I think, you know, he's really good at what he does. I think he's very comfortable and confident in what he does. And I think that I think he feels good about his lane. And I think he knows, for example, like with the magician or in-game strategy, you know, Theo and I talk through that stuff with him, but we know he's pulling the right levers. We know things will go wrong at times, but that, you know, the mindset was always good. And then, you know, we really stay out of his lane. And I think he looks at it like, you know, he knows he's got impact on our decisions. We always run stuff by him. But I think, you know, he works with Andrew really well in Tampa. I think he thinks that we have kind of similar mindset here. And I think he knows that, you know, ultimately all we want to do is give him a winning product. So I think he doesn't feel territorial about that area, which is really nice. And he's a joy to work with. I mean, I think the person that the media sees every day is what we see every day. He's in a very good mood. He's prepared, and he just loves to win. Probably my favorite thing about him as a manager is the way he goes after each individual game to win. He doesn't really think about tomorrow, or he doesn't think about the ramifications. I think the players really respond to that. I know on Wednesday's game, the game that went 11 innings, he really pushed the bullpen, got that win. We were very thin in the bullpen yesterday, which luckily Jake was really good, but he didn't stop and think about how it was going to impact the future. He won the game, and then we dealt with yesterday when it came, and I think the players really like that because, you know, they know he's out to win that game.
We're talking to Jed Hoyer, Cubs general manager, here on Cap and Haw, Comcast Sportsnet, WGN Plus. Can you give us an update on Rafael Soriano, who you signed, but we have not seen hide nor hair of him yet?
Yeah, I think we will soon. You know, the visa process can be difficult at times and slow, but I think that's coming to a conclusion, and we're going to get him over to the States here hopefully very soon and get him going. But yeah, it's been a delay and slower than we had hoped, but we think that part is sort of coming to an end. I will say, you know, our bullpen has been much maligned at different times during the year, and there may be more times during the year it gets maligned again, but I think you got to give those guys a lot of credit. They've thrown really well now for the last two or three weeks. And some guys that had struggled early, you know, a guy like a Jason Mott, for example, has really put it together and had a nice long run. So certainly, you know, we're excited to get Soriano going. But at the same time, I do think we're pretty happy with the way our bullpen has bounced back and thrown well.
Jed, you mentioned Jake Arrieta. It didn't pan out for him in Baltimore for whatever reason. He's come over here and just been everything that you could ever dream for and more. I mean, the guy is arguably the ace of the staff. He probably should be an all-star. He's 22-12 with a 2.81 through 50 starts. When you acquired him, let's spin it forward. What has impressed you most about Jake? Because anybody who spent a second around him sees the work he puts in, sees the kind of guy he is. People gravitate towards him in the clubhouse. He says things like he did yesterday after the start that we can beat anybody. What has impressed you most about Jake Arrieta?
Yeah, probably the preparedness. He takes care of his body so well. You know, he eats really well. He's incredibly career task focused. And I think that's the kind of thing you don't know when you trade for a guy. You try to do all your digging on a guy's makeup, but you never get that level of detail. And he's really impressive that way. I think he really wants to be great. He's willing to put in the work and the difficult things to do that. And he's been, obviously when we acquired him, we liked the arm, we liked the talent. I mean, you have no way to know that, sort of getting out of Baltimore and getting into a new situation was going to have this impact on his career. So, we liked the trade the day we did it. Obviously, we love it now. He's been wonderful. Pedro Strop has been really good in our bullpen. So, that's a deal that worked out really well. And it seems like a lot more than 2 years ago, but I guess it's only been 2 years, and we're thrilled about it.
In terms of extension talks again on Arrieta, do you talk about that stuff during the season or no, it's Scott Boras, we just wait?
Yeah, I mean, not in season. Me, the guy that we'd love to have part of the organization for a long time. And, I think that's something that's obvious when you watch his talent. But, I think that that's the kind of thing we'll discuss over the winter, but certainly in season, that's not something we're focused on.
Jed, has this team exceeded expectations so far for you?
Yeah, I think it probably has. I mean, I think we had high expectations, and I still think our best baseball is ahead of us. But I think that we've done a really nice job of having some dips during the course of the season, but finding ways to win games. I mean, let's face it, we're struggling offensively right now. We've had to, with injuries that everyone has, we've had to run out some lineups that we probably didn't expect to run out at the beginning of the season. But our guys have found ways to win, and I think when you look at this stretch, we played against, we played the Dodgers, the Cardinals, and the Mets, and we really didn't play well for big stretches of that, but we found ways to win five of those games, and I think that really says a lot about the character of the team and about the leadership of Joe, that we were able to keep battling and to win five of those games. And the one thing about baseball is there's no point or reason to kind of take stock of where you are during the season. You have a big sweep in New York. We play today at 1:20. There's not a lot of time for reflection, and we just need to keep moving forward and keep doing that over and over. But I think that's probably the thing that impressed me most and has exceeded my expectations is we've been pretty good about winning some games, even when we don't sort of have our best lineup out there or even our best, our best offensive showing. We've been able to scratch together some wins where we probably didn't deserve to.
Jed, the Cardinals fired their scouting director, Chris Correa, yesterday, and Joe Strauss has a magnificent piece in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch this morning that with that acknowledgement, and there's still probably more shoes to drop on this whole thing, has it changed the way you deal with your staff, like calling everyone in and going, guys, you better understand exactly what happened here, and this stuff can never go on in our organization, or no, we don't have to worry about it?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's. I can't really comment on what happened there. It seems inappropriate to comment on, but as far as our own staff, yeah, we've definitely gone through. We've had meetings about our security and about these issues, and they're sort of new issues. Not that we haven't had computers, in baseball operations for a long time, but the idea of having databases up on the web and having how they're accessed and sort of the ethics that go along with that. They're important conversations. It's sort of a new area of baseball and, something we have to work through. But, yeah, we've had meetings about that, and we sort of feel good about where we are with that group of guys and our staff.
Jed, when you talk about the success of a baseball team, you've been in good clubhouses, you've been in bad clubhouses. How important is clubhouse leadership, not from your manager, but from your players, and when you're talking about winning?
It's incredibly important. It's probably the aspect of the game that I think when you're on the outside, you understand the least, because it's intangible. And people, and a lot of things that are intangible, people don't believe in because you can't quantify it. But to me, one of the biggest things with baseball is that, like I was saying before, you play basically every day all summer. And there's a a challenge in doing that. You know, the team doesn't show up to play, you know, with the same energy every night. And there's a lot of games that get won or lost based on which team has, you know, is better prepared, which team has more energy that day, which team actually wants to play, and you know, which team focuses on a getaway day, or which team focuses after getting in at 5 a.m. And a lot of that comes down to leadership, and comes down to, you know, guys really caring about winning and losing, and not simply, you know, worry about their arbitration stats or worried about, you know, free agency. And I think we've got a great group this year. As I was saying before, I feel like we come to play every day. We've won a lot of games we probably shouldn't have won, I think, because of that nature. And hopefully we'll keep doing that all year. But that's really the thing. When I think about the leadership in a clubhouse, it's about putting out fires before they really start and have to get up to the manager. And a lot of it's about having the mindset of showing up to play every single day. And I know sometimes on the outside that gets minimized, but, you know, if you think about a 2 out of 3 series, you know, when you win, let's say you split the first 2 games, and the third game is a getaway day, and a team's traveling to the West Coast. You know, the team that really has more energy and more fight on that day game oftentimes wins, and I think a lot of that comes down to having leadership on your players.
Hey, as we let you go away from baseball for a second, you told me an unbelievable story that 2009 you went to France to visit your now wife, correct?
Yeah.
Okay, so you take her to dinner on the south of France. You have this romantic dinner. There's 2 tables overlooking the south of France outside. You and your wife, Meryl, at one. Who's sitting at the other table?
Yeah, make it sound like I'm a world traveler. Yeah, I've been over there one time. But, yeah, so it was a little small balcony over the water, and they seated my wife and me at one table, and they seated LeBron and his now wife at the other. And, you know, I was telling you that story because we ended up talking to him, you know, for really the entire dinner, kind of back and forth. And I really grew to respect him. And he was talking about traveling Europe, talking about his family. He just seemed like a really down-to-earth guy. Actually, the funny part of the story, it started to rain a little bit at the very end of the night. And he looked at my wife, and this is a packed restaurant, and no tables available. He looked at my wife and said, "Are you cold?" And she said, "Yeah, a little bit." He said, "Hold on." He walks inside and gets us 2 tables inside with, like, just snapping his fingers. And I always thought it's nice to be the king when you can pull that off. But I told you the story because a lot of people like to take shots at him, and I thought his performance in the finals, I thought it was one of the greatest individual performances that I've ever seen. I mean, he almost carried, you know, a collection of Knicks cast-offs to a title, and I think, you know, when people criticize him as a player, I just think this guy's probably one of the best players of all time and one of the best competitors. So. And, you know, that was sort of the nature of me telling you a story, but it's a nice one. You know, you work with elite baseball players all the time, and you kind of get used to it. But it's kind of fun to be around an elite player in another sport and actually be able to be a fan for a second.
Did he go steak frites? Do you remember the order? Now I want to know everything about the meal.
I really don't. The only other funny part of the story was I remember. He pulled out, I'd never seen one before, he pulled out a flip camera because it was like an amazing view. And I just remember he referred to himself as King James when he did that. I always remember that.
Jed, thanks for the time. You know, everyone wants you to trade everybody and get all these great players here, but just stay the course and see where this thing goes.
All right, guys. Thanks for the time.
See you at the ballpark.
See ya.
There he is, Jed Hoyer, general manager of Chicago Cubs.
Assistant GM Cap. Just stay the course there, Jed. Listen to me. I'm Cappy.
That's it. Take a time out. Everything brought to you by the great people at Horwitz and Horwitz Law Firm. Take a time out and discuss what we just heard. That LeBron story is awesome. Be right back.
Now, more Cap and Haw on Comcast Sportsnet and WGN Plus.
Welcome back, Kevin Haw, Comcast Sportsnet. D-Haw on vacay. Well-deserved. Have a great time with your family, David. Mark Carman, Ryan McGuffey are in our studios. I'm David Kaplan. Mike Jacobson, our executive producer. Matt Rooney, our associate producer. And Pat Gastel, PG-13, our great director. We have news on the Blackhawk front. Andrew Desjardins has agreed to a 2-year, $1.6 million deal, $800,000 a year. His agent said he took significantly less to stay here because he loves Chicago. Okay, so that said, is that a shot at Brandon Saad? It's
Feels like it. If the agent, it feels like it's an agent taking a shot.
I got to know what the offer was for Andrew Jardine elsewhere, but if it was over $2 million, he needs to get his head examined, with all due respect. And so great to have him.
So if it was a $2.2 million offer from
who had the worst record in the NHL last year? I don't care.
Ottawa.
Sure.
$2.2 million. You're going to Ottawa for 2 years rather than 2 years, 1.6 here?
It's great for the Hawks. And maybe,
you're insane.
And maybe he makes more money down the line by staying here because he'll be in a system where he gets highlighted, whatever, and he'll
so
have
wait, let me get this right.
The people that argue that athletes who go for the money, like Brandon Saad, are wrong. That's crazy to me. You have to make as much as you can.
Well, if you told me that Brandon Saad got offered $1 million here and $6 million there, I get it.
Agreed.
Okay, it was 3.5 right here, and it's 6 there.
That's different.
That's a huge difference.
God bless him, but then don't say to the media, it's not about the money,
it's
I just want
winning.
To be here, it's about winning for me. Don't say it. Just say, look, I'm going to let my agent handle this. I hope it works. If it doesn't, I had a great run. That's all you have to say. Carmelo Anthony, it's not about the money, it's about winning. He's a fraud. So you're telling me I'm paying you $1 million a year to play on my team. Your contract's up. I offer you $1.5 million, and Ottawa offers you $2 million.
Uh-huh.
You're going to Ottawa.
Yes. $500.
Good luck to you. Have a good time.
Yeah, I agree. See you later. Have fun in Ottawa.
Have a good time.
Okay, well, hold on a second.
Because after taxes.
$500,000.
Hold on a second.
Okay, go ahead.
After taxes, that's about $275,000, $300,000.
Yeah, okay. That's a lot of dough.
Endorsements here, playoff money.
Horowitz and Associates may offer him $400,000. There's your $2 million.
Well, if Horowitz is going to do that, that's a whole other story.
And playing on a team that wins championships will increase your earning power down the road.
I agree.
If you're about the last dollar, sign one-year deals and jump all around the league. Good luck to you.
There's nothing wrong with that. There's absolutely nothing.
Okay, Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane could have gotten 12-14 on the open market.
They took
10.5.
And that's also a difference. When you're making what Toews and Kane are making, nearly $10 million a year, okay, every last dollar at that point, a little bit different. For Andrew Desjardins, who's never had, I mean, and that's huge money for 99.99% of the populace, but it's not huge money as far as NHL players go. Yes, you have to consider another $500,000. God bless that he's here. It's great for the Hawks. But for Brandon Saad, I did what's best for Brandon Saad. And what he said to the media, you can't trust what these guys say to the media.
They should never say it.
Oh, it doesn't. Just let it go. It doesn't matter. It's no one. No one's honest. Very few are.
I want one guy to have the you-know-whats to walk up to the podium and go, I'm here because you guys put more damn money on the table. I'll be honest with you. I loved it in Chicago. You gave me more money. You got me.
Yeah, but
I'm a mercenary. I got a shelf life. I'll be retired within 10 years. 15 years, whatever the age is, and you guys gave me more money, let's go.
First of all, if Andrew Desjardins had a two-year, $5 million offer on the table, he would have taken it. But when you're talking about 2 years, $2 million, 2 years, $2.2 million, or 2 years, $1.6 million to stay in Chicago with this fan base, with the chance to win a Stanley Cup every year, coming off of a Stanley Cup, give me that.
No question about it.
I need to know what the exact figures are.
Talk to players. The way they're treated here versus the way they're treated in other towns.
What's the dollar figure? Is it $1 million more? Do you leave?
If I make it.
What's the line for you?
$1 million.
$1 million.
Yep.
Okay,
well, it depends. If you offer me $3 million to stay in Chicago and I can get $4 million somewhere else, I'm taking the $3 million in Chicago.
Yeah, that's what we're saying. That's $1 million.
Get your Blackhawks underwear on.
I mean, it's unbelievable. I didn't know you were so shallow. 312-235-2525. Hey, you know what? Get the ultimate experience with the all-new Samsung Curved 4K Ultra HD TV Adapt in Glenview. The Samsung 4K Curved Ultra HD, get the fastest internet and smart TV functions available. Come in to app today, see the complete selection of Samsung electronics, or call them up at 847-544-2228, 847-544-2228. For complete satisfaction, free delivery, a better experience, shop app, ABT. App.com, the website. Ask for the one and only. He's Steve Shapiro. You see the little bald guy running around the store? Guy is an absolute rock star. App pleasing people since 1936. Quick timeout. Be right back.